just to say that the wise people up in the balcony who are in charge of the live streaming and AV, knowing my idiosyncrasies, such as speaking and forgetting to turn on the microphone, they have a big poster board, which they hold up. It says, turn microphone on, so, which they just held up for me. So what I was saying, what is there to say in this world of ceaseless words? Endless medias endlessly projecting words. So many of us are inundated with words. Right? And especially when a situation like now, a crisis situation appears, it just sort of, it intensifies in all ways this need we have to endlessly provide information, advice, good and bad. I mean, I'm inundated. People are sending me all this little Dharma advice. So in Buddhism, we call this upper level of our consciousness, our thinking consciousness, is probably the weakest link. And we somehow think the more we cram it with information, with inspiration, that's a significant thing to do. And so here I am today. So that's why I felt it was so important that we begin with meditation, with knowing that if we are not stabilizing and clarifying and opening ourselves at a deeper place within our mind and being, there's no counterweight to this endless stream of information, and then the emotionality that comes from that. Perhaps the antidote would be less words, more practice. Less words, more practice. So when we have a social situation like is going on now with the coronavirus, the pandemic, there is an immediacy to it. There's an acuteness in the unfolding of human history to it. And yet, as I've always suggested, Buddhism is interesting because it certainly has a lot to say to how we relate to what is going on, but it gives us a bigger picture. A vaster awareness and understanding that gives us a context in which we're dealing intelligently and wisely with the particulars of any situation. And that's often hard for us Americans, because we are basically have become small picture people. We like to deal with problems, we like to deal with situations, we like specific tasks and problems to solve. But we are not people who look at big pictures. We are not people who tend to look at underlying causes. And therefore, we unfortunately are not people that often come up with real solutions as opposed to temporary solutions, even to social problems. I mean, sitting here today in this primarily empty meditation hall, and knowing the emails that I receive and the emails that I sent out yesterday to the community about the virus and et cetera, and about all the precautions we are taking, social distancing, and, you know, all the things we're doing, I could not help notice as I drove here this morning and came out of my block to see across the street from me our local diner, the Three Coins, packed. Packed. Right? And they're, as usual on a Sunday morning, they're lined up outside, not 6 feet from each other, I assure you. Everybody right on top of one another. Right? So while we're here, I mean, I'm looking out, I'm a good 10, 12 feet from Diane, or the 12 feet from, you know. This also is true too, isn't it? This is our world. This is the world we live in. This is the world that we share with others. And this has always been this way. So what is the, before we get to the small picture, let's get to the big picture. What is this big picture? And you all know, you've heard me, you've studied Buddhism. You know, the big picture is that this world is impermanent. This world is unstable. This world is fragile. The world, the systems of the world, the people of the world, the bodies of the world, all of us participate in this unpredictability, fragility of life, which has always been the case and always will be the case unless something, unless we somehow mutate into something else. Buddha taught to be born a human being is to be subject to sickness, old age, and death. That's big picture. We understand that. Even when we are not sick, even when we are young, even when we're alive, as practitioners, we meditate on this. Why? So we have the big picture of what's going on in life and the unfolding of life. So when things occur in these categories, we are not surprised, we are not afraid, we are not angry, we are not disappointed or sad, because we understand this is the way things are. Things unfold because of causes and conditions. It's causes and conditions, cause and effect, impermanence, dependent origination. Everything is affected by everything else. Every effect has many, every effect creates many new causes. It is an endless unfolding of causes and conditions, all endless variables, all interrelating to each other, and all endlessly creating new things. And we are all in that mix. Is that not true? And so in that mix, our need for stability, which manifests as control, wanting to control outcomes, wanting to create a sense of stability and safety and security. You know, how do we do that in this, basically in a situation that is really uncontrollable and is subject to endless variables, of which mostly all of them are beyond our control? And whether we're talking about what's going on with the virus right now, or whether we're talking about anything else in our world. Global warming, politics, I mean, it's so many variables that even if in our little universe, we're doing everything we can to do it in a way that we think was helpful or beneficial or right, we are just one part of something much larger and more intricate, of which we do not have control. Is that true? Please take a moment to ask yourself, is that true? Is that true from your own personal experience and from your study of history or whatever, social movements, whatever you want to study? The history of disease. The history of epidemics and pandemics. What is the truth about this life and this world that we have taken birth into? I say this to you because without the big picture, it's easy to get swept away by the acute unfolding of life, because, you know, that's sort of like what's happening right now. But it's really quite strange. This flu thing is quite interesting. We can't see it. You know, if there were people with all kinds of symptoms in front of us and people were dropping dead on the street and people were, you know what I mean? Then we could say, oh, I can see it, you see. But we can't even see it. At this point, we don't know who the carriers and who are passing it on or not, do we? No. We don't know that for anybody else, and we don't even know it for ourselves. Well, that's interesting. And even if we tested negative today, we could do something that 10 minutes later. Now, I don't say this to scare you. I just say this to say, this is the way it is. You know, I was interested. I was wondering, like, what about the flu? You know, this the flu that we all talk, you know, this is the flu season, and we get. In so far, and this, I'm sure statistics are over the place, the amount of people in the 2019-2020 flu season, between 36 and 50 million people have had some flu-like symptoms. 17 to 24 million people have made a medical visit for flu-related. There have been between 370,000 and 600,000 flu-related hospitalizations, and there have been between 22 and 50 million deaths flu-related. We're not talking about coronavirus. That's this year. No, we don't know about that, do we? Or we don't think about that. Or that's not headlines, is it? But it's quite significant, isn't it? This is a little background to the things we don't even notice and we live with as normal. I think I wrote this down wrong. But anyhow, there are millions of auto deaths a year. Or maybe I should take that back. I can't even remember my writing. And there are 4.4 million people injured, requiring medical attention every year from automobile accidents. That's not a headline, is it? So we were not even aware of the instability and potentiality for harm to our bodies and our friends and loved ones' body that we are always exposed to in this life. Is that true? What is the nature of this life? The Buddha said it is impermanent, unstable, fragile, and endlessly unfolding according to causes and conditions. And the opposite of control, wanting to control, wanting to know the answer, wanting to be sure, wanting to be safe, wanting to be secure, based on this kind of looking into, has led me, as I think it's led many Buddhist practitioners over the centuries, to say, in truth, we don't know anything, do we? We don't know how things are going to turn out. We don't know if they're going to turn out this way or that way. We don't know. We don't know whether this planet's going to, and the life on it's going to go on or not, do we? No, anymore. Nobody knows the course of this pandemic at this point. Nobody knows. Nobody even knows who has it and who doesn't have it. We don't know. And again, based on what I saw going on down at the Three Coins this morning, even though we are making our best efforts up here, further in Nebraska, we don't know whether what we're doing is really going to have any effect in terms of slowing the spread. Right? And yet, we do our part. Right? Yet we do our part to act wisely and prudently for the benefit of all, with the knowing we don't know whether this is really going to have any positive effect at all. I think this is the wonder of our practice. That we act in a noble way, not knowing what its effect will be. Not being attached to outcome. So, you know, while there are these kind of practical things we can do right now, and, you know, again, the websites, CDC sites, the news, I mean, they'll just tell you, telling us this all the time, the things to do, and we all know there are things that we can do and not do to halt the spread of the virus and to help, you know, which is important, obviously. Those are things that we can do, which all of us should be doing, right? But as practitioners of Dharma, we should really ultimately all be doing the same things we always do. It's sort of like, this is my set of skills, and, you know, I always use them every day, no matter what happens. My tool bag is the same. My competency in the tools and using the tools is the same. And according to the situation that's arising in front of me, I may use this tool or I may use that tool. Can you see that mind state, which is different than panicking, than fear, than despair? You know, we practice generosity. You know, People are hoarding. What does hoarding mean? People are going into their stores and just wiping things off the shelf, not because they need them now, because they what? Because in our society, we are so individualistic because we cannot rely on the whole. We don't trust the whole. We don't trust society. We don't trust our government. We don't trust our social institutions that they will be there for the whole, for all of us. So then all of us then end up thinking only of what? Me and my needs and my family. And so you go out there and you just, in that kind of greed for safety and for my needs, we only think of ourselves, don't we? So people are hoarding and doing these things. You know, rather than thinking, you know, what other people may need. Leaving some for others. There are only 5 left. Do I take them all? You see what I'm saying? It's a very interesting time. What's going on and how individuals respond, and how they respond is really from the quality of their life. The very fundamental teachings that we practice about self. There are those who live from self. Well, we all live from self to one degree or another, but there's some who only live from self. And hopefully there are others that are more selfless. And if you're more selfless, you are more open to noticing that there are other people, our brothers and sisters, who have needs and wants and want to be safe. Right? I care about them too. I might even say, let them have it. Let them have it. I can live on rice for a while. More vegetables for others. It won't kill me. Yeah, so this is our world. You know, those of us here, most of us here live in Florida. We know that we live with hurricanes. We know that we live in an unstable, potentially dangerous, insecure place, don't we? Here we are. We've made that choice, knowing that that's the case. So when hurricane season arises and we get the word on this one and that one, we hopefully are responding appropriately. We hopefully have prepared, which means we don't panic. We understand, you know, what needs to be done. Our inner mind state can stay the same. Stable, grounded, not afraid, thinking of others. The same way we hopefully show up every day. It just kind of raises the, it's kind of raises the ante a little bit. All kinds of natural disasters, health disasters like this one. It's all the same. It's just another day dealing with whatever's arising in the same way that I always deal with things. And which comes back to, you know, what is the depth of my practice? You know, to me, whether it's a personal or interpersonal a difficulty or a societal difficulty like we're facing now, this is the test of my practice. Right? This is the test of my practice. How deep have the teachings of impermanence and non-self permeated my mind? How truly grounded and stable am I? Is my natural instinct to immediately think of helping others and the well-being of others, or does it first go to me? And I don't say this that you should be evaluating yourself in a critical way, but it's only in a self-evaluative way. We need to evaluate ourselves and say, yeah, what is this bringing out in me? And we do that, again, because we are practitioners and we are self-aware. And if we see that it's only bringing out fear and kind of a attachment to self and a separation and, you know, a kind of walling off, well, that should be interesting to us, right? That's not necessarily bad. Don't think you're bad. But it's like, oh, this shows us, you know, remember I said, many people change up here, right? They read all the books, they listen to all the talks, they talk the talk, okay? They think, we think we're pretty developed. But you see, when the crisis happens, when the difficulty happens, that's when our alaya, that's when our storehouse gets activated. And then we get a bigger sense, oh, still a lot going on inside me that I have not attended to. Still parts of me, still very potent, that need to be attended to. So from a practitioner point of view, something like what's going on now is a wonderful opportunity for us to observe, to be mindful of our response, of what's coming up with us. But at the same time, because we are in the process of transformation and change, to use these situations and opportunities to do something different if what we'll see in ourselves is something that we think is not supportive of the noble path that we were wanting to follow in this life. So that is why in the mind training tradition, we have the slogan, turn adversity into the path of awakening. I've given a lot of teachings on that over time, but this is it. We are now in a moment of adversity, right? For some of us, it's the adversity is very mild, right? We can't come to Sangha the way we'd like to, or we may be working from home, or our kids may be home from school. And we, you know, I mean, there may be all kinds of adversities like that that are disturbing the normalcy of our lives. And for those who are getting sick, those who are getting significantly sick, those who are in quarantine, and those who will die, there will be a much higher degree of adversity. But this is a time of adversity. And as I pointed out earlier, there's been a lot of adversity going on all the time. They just haven't made the headlines. It's normal. But adversity is the path of awakening. It is not an obstacle. It is a challenge. It is a wake-up call. Will this adversity bring out the worst in me or bring out the best in me? Will it bring out fear or fearlessness? Will it bring out egocentricity or other-centricity, centric on others? Right? Does it close me off or does it open me? Have I really developed the capacity, no matter what the external situation, that inwardly I know I can always be calm stable, and as Thich Nhat Hanh says, even happy. So I wanted to, you know, because these are difficult times, there are several times in the past decade where we've brought out these fierce mantras, Tsongpa Gyare, the 12th century Tibetan master. And many of you are familiar with them, but it's good to bring out these powerful mantras. Mantras are traditionally words that have power to dispel adversity. They are words of power. And most of these mantras we think are Sanskrit, but there are ones that aren't in Sanskrit. This was in Tibetan, now it's in English. But they're powerful words that within them have the power to break up and destroy negativity. In this case, it's of our own mind. So let me read them to you. First mantra, whatever has to happen, let it happen. Second mantra, whatever the situation is, it is fine. Third mantra, I really don't need anything to be happy other than Dharma. These are the three fierce mantras. Very powerful. Please use them. Coming days and weeks of uncertainty and unknowing. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Now, going back to the time of the Buddha said, and it's taught, that ordinary human beings, they live in the world of what's called hope and fear. Right? That's our daily experience, little to little, big to big, right? We hope when we get to Publix, we're able to buy what we want, but we're afraid we won't. Hope and fear, right? That's like a little one. Well, that's our whole life, you know. I hope I don't get the coronavirus, but I'm afraid I will. I hope this person doesn't get it, but I'm afraid they will. Right? I hope the coronavirus is brought under control, but I'm afraid it won't. Right? I mean, that's endless. That is our life. We hope for the best, but we're afraid of the worst. We hope she likes me, but we're afraid she won't. We hope this relationship will last, but we're afraid it won't. Right? Hope I'll get an A, but I'm afraid I'll get a B. Hope I'll get a raise, but I'm afraid I won't. I mean, I could go on a million times, but very simply, this is what goes on inside us. We live in the world of hope and fear. See, Buddhism is wonderful because it has these little phrases that kind of, you can almost bring in everything into your life. Oh yeah, that's really what's going on. I hope the meal turns out good. I hope the coffee is hot enough. You know what I mean? But it means if we have hope, we have fear because we're afraid it won't. Hope I get a good night's sleep. Afraid I won't. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. This is the antidote to hope and fear. This is not a moral judgment. This is not an ethical judgment. This is about everything is unfolding according to causes and conditions. Let go of hope and fear. let go of this tight need to control our life and outcomes and the people in it. Whatever has to happen, let it happen, is an acknowledgement that whatever is going to happen is going to happen. Stop trying to interfere. Now, again, that doesn't mean that when you have something, I mean, you know, because I can hear people go, but doesn't, I mean, aren't we supposed to be doing something? I mean, look, right now, aren't we here, you know, not having Sangha? Of course, it doesn't mean you you don't act wisely. You don't act intelligently. You don't do what you can to bring good and benefit to the situation, but you understand that we cannot control it. So whatever has to happen, let it happen, is an inside letting go of the need to control and manipulate life and let things and people be. What does that look like? As a mind state, we call it equanimity. Right? Because if you live in hope and fear, when you get to Publix and you can get what you want, you are what? Elated. If you get to Publix and you don't get what you want, you are downcast. And multiply that by 10,000 every day. That's our day. Right? Get on 275, hope there's no traffic. Traffic, right? No traffic, how do you feel? How do you feel, Bill? Good, elated. How do you feel when you get on 275 and they're backed up? Down, right? My test case right there. Not just little. The things that really cause us suffering around us are big. Whatever has to happen, let it happen, because it's gonna happen. Again, doesn't mean we don't act and do what we can, but inside we know, I don't know anything. We don't know what the outcome of this virus could be. It could have positive outcomes. How could it have positive outcomes? I don't know, I saw the other day they're talking about paid sick leave for human beings in our society. You know, right? Wow. That millions of people not having medical care can be a problem in our, you know what I mean? That are an underfunded medical system. So we don't know, do we? That even in this, there may not be positive outcomes for human beings. Because human beings are basically short-sighted, narrow-minded, and egocentric. They don't see the big picture, do we? No. Oftentimes, they unfortunately need crises to wake them up. So we don't know whether something that appears as something bad may in the long run, unfortunately, turn out to be something good. We don't know how many disasters, fires, floods, droughts, disappearing seacoasts it's going to take before most people in the world wake up to acknowledge what? What the scientists have been acknowledging for decades. The climate is warming and has serious consequences for the future of life. It could just very well be for most human beings. It's only when they are directly suffering, right, that they wake up. That is the nature of this world, unfortunately or fortunately. We can go fortunately, unfortunately, but either way, this is the nature of things. So whatever happens, whatever has to happen, let it happen. Again, doesn't mean don't act. It means in your mind, you understand you cannot control. So you might have been, some of you might have been upset by that one. Whatever the situation is, it is fine. This one will probably really drive a lot of people up the wall. But we need to understand what's being talked about. Because this is written from the point of view of Dharma practice, personal development. Whatever the situation, it is fine. Situation, you know, means the external situation that I am now existing in, whether it's the external, so-called external world, or my own body, whatever it is fine, mean it is a perfect time to practice, transform, wake up. We never say, oh, because of this or that, you know, too many obstacles, too many challenges, too many scary things going on. No, whatever the situation is in our life, it is fine for us to wake up, for us to practice compassion and understand and patience and loving kindness. Perfect opportunity, perfect situation. It's fine. Whatever is fine. This is, again, not a moral, ethical judgment. And it is totally denuded of the way most of us live our life, which is fantasy. Idealism. We live and we want worlds that don't exist anyplace else but in our minds. That is called a fantasy. The world is what it is. The world is full of beautiful things. The world is full of terrible things. Beautiful things, ugly things. Good things, bad things. Kind people, unkind people. You put them all together, and what do you get? The world. As it is. Why is it the way it is? Because of causes and conditions. No other reason than causes and conditions. The same reason we are what we are, as we are right now. We begin with the place, not that most of us do, maybe, oh, I don't like myself, I'm not fine. The world isn't fine. So all of a sudden we're off in all that kind of endless thinking and negativity and all these reasons for us not to practice and just, you know, to despair, to doubt. This is all reasons we give ourselves not to practice. Just more of the same. Whatever's going on, it's fine. Great opportunity to practice. You gotta stop waiting for the right time, the right situation. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, is the best time to practice. So whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it is fine. And finally, I really don't need anything to be happy other than the Dharma. Or some translations take out the happy. I don't need anything in this life but the Dharma. Strong statement. I mean, obviously this character was quite a guy. You know, what is most important in my life? What is necessity? See, it was interesting when I was looking at websites yesterday. I can't, or, you know, about churches and what the other churches were doing. And I was interested that, you know, I said to you earlier in the day yesterday, you know, most of them seem to be open this weekend, at least in Tampa Bay. And it was just kind of interesting what our brothers, sisters in the faith-based traditions were up to. And one comment by one pastor I thought was interesting. He said, and again, I have not been paying close attention. He was saying, I realize that according to the guidelines, I think he might have been talking about faith or worship. I think worship is not considered an essential. I mean, maybe in the guidelines they're putting out, they're talking about, you know, only do essential things, you know, such as like having Sunday brunch at Three Coins Diner or thing. You know, like, what is essential? It's very interesting. You know, what is essential? You know, what is it that I really cannot do without? How much of whatever it is do I really need? What is essential? So for this faith-based church, basically he was saying, you know, we consider joint worship, prayer together to be essential, essential thing. For us. Interesting. Because we do tolerate people just all on top of one another at you know, right? At stores and shopping places and, you know, restaurants or whatever. At least at this point, may change. But, you know, churches, spiritual places, don't gather there. Because what they do there is non-essential. It's very interesting. I was kind of moved by that. It made me reflect on our society. I don't need anything whatsoever but the Dharma. Is that true for you? You know what? You know, and Dharma doesn't mean like I mean, don't look to the. If those are your home, don't look to your Dharma books and go, that's what I need. You know, don't check your, whatever you check, you know, to make sure all your Dharma podcasts are still, you know, still have not been taken away. No. It's the Dharma. It's the internal Dharma. It's your capacity to be mindful and present. Your capacity not to get caught in thoughts and see the empty non-self nature of thoughts. It's your capacity to generate the heart of love and compassion. It's your capacity to have enough intelligence to know that everything is arising according to causes and conditions. You know, and I could go on. This is the Dharma. And I need this because with it, everything else becomes possible in a good way. But if I don't have it, if I lose it, then I get lost in the world of delusion and suffering. What is essential? See, times like this are wonderful. What is essential? So, for a man who said he didn't, about an hour ago, said he didn't know what to say, so he just goes on and on. But I want to hear from you, questions or whatever. I think this is important, again, that we use this crisis in our community, in the world, it could be, to take a deep look. It's a stopping point. And again, you know, if we go into a quarantine situation like other countries have, you know, we will sort of all be on our own little retreats for a while. So for those of us who said, well, I'm just too busy to go on retreat, you know, social conditions may enforce greater retreat on us, greater pulling back. We may have more time for study and practice. So, Brian and Teresa, you can take questions, and people in the hall, there are just a few of us in the hall.
We just sent out a message to everyone that they can ask questions, and I'm waiting for them to see what pops up. So if anyone in the hall would like to start.
So how many people are on Zoom?
160 people, 160.
Good. So that's quite wonderful to have a good community. together. I must admit I did ask some of the people who are around to stay here today just so I could see a few human beings. Like I wasn't quite ready to just do it to an empty hall. So again, I mean, not necessarily, but are there any questions about this or comments on this? Or anybody, you know, this what I've been saying disturbs them. I don't know if it could, but it could. And so please, this is important.
Fred, could you tell people to hover over chat at the bottom of the screen so they can open their chat buttons?
You want me to tell people to open their chat buttons if they want to chat at the bottom of their screens?
Correct. Thank you.
There's a button at the bottom for those on. On Zoom, there's a button at the bottom of your screen which says chat, and that will allow you to type in your question.
Yes, and actually they just Angie typed that she hears me talking, so I guess they just got that information twice.
Okay. Anyhow, so are there any questions? Anybody in the hall or anybody? Yes, there is.
Nina said, in this time of staying home and having a beautiful opportunity to practice, how do you recommend we help others?
Yeah, again, it is part of our tradition that when one human being transforms, the whole world transforms. Right? In the same way, you know, we didn't hold our Sunday Sangha today, right? Because we want to say, well, we should be very cautious. And even if there's a slim chance that somebody may be, that we may be part of the transmission of this virus, you know, let us not do that. So again, as I pointed out, the rest of the world could be out there transmitting it right and left. But the fact that we have stopped in this little group does make a change in the whole. Right? So certainly, again, and this is the, you know, this is the an article of faith for people on a spiritual path, that we are interdependent with everything. And when we are one cell within the human body, and when that one cell, even in an unhealthy body, gets well, it has the capacity of kind of changing the immune system and maybe can help unhealthy cells around it. Again, we have in our practice, we have this introspective quality. We do our own internal work. And so certainly, if you're staying home and you are doing your own internal work and making sure that you are liberating yourself from fear and anger and despair and sadness, and you're cultivating all the wholesome positive qualities of mind and looking at the situation, that is a wonderful way to be of help to this world. As well as, you know, we're not in down lock quarantine yet. So with proper precautions, as you've all heard over and over, you know, we can still relate to people. You know, we can still be there for people. You know, let us be there for people in a good way, in a wholesome way, in a supportive way. You know, we may be in a good place, but there may be people who are afraid, who are scared when they can't control. Let us help them in the best way we can. Let us be there for them. Right? And then again, I mean, this is, you know, through these technologies, we have this ability to connect with each other. I think fearlessness is a wonderful quality to project at this time, which is not rashness, which is not throw caution to the wind. It's a grounded fearlessness based on these mantras, based on the teaching. Other questions?
Yes. Beth says, one idea that surfaced when washing hands, say the metta. Then Judy said, we can help others by taking time to say thank you to the Publix checkout lady, the man at the gas station. Yeah. And then Maya asked, how long do you plan to have Sunday Dharma on Zoom in respect to virus issues?
Again, sending loving kindness in the world. I mean, that's our metta practice, right? I mean, we do that already. We, those of us who are here in Tampa, we have full moon loving kindness, compassion meditation. Sending out for the world the good wishes, may everyone be safe, may everyone be happy, is our practice. We should be continuing to practice. That should be in our mind because it turns the mind in a positive way. And that is true, that even if we can't go out and do anything, our minds can be free to only wish for the well-being of people, as opposed to the Sunday Sangha. I mean, we are responding to the external environment and what we're being advised by the scientists and the medical community. So we will continue doing this as long as it seems the prudent thing to do. Yes.
Then Anna says, when I was a child in an alcoholic family, I decided that more than wanting to be happy, I wanted most to be able to weather any obstacle that arose in life. That, to me, leads to actual happiness like the Dharma. Then Kevin said, can you explain the difference between fantasy and envisioning a different world in order to create positive change, innovate, or a world that is better?
Yeah, so, I mean, imagination is imagination. Fantasy is a fantasy, okay? Anything that's not really happening right now, anything that we imagine in the future is a fantasy. We are just using our imaginative qualities. We are fabricating. Okay. So in that sense, it's all the same. We're endlessly fabricating. We even fabricate a past. We'll just talk about the future. We also fabricate a present. But as for what Kevin's saying, you know, it doesn't mean that thought, imagination cannot be harnessed in a good way, in a more directive way, to support our transformation. Yeah. So in that sense, we call that aspiration, we call that intention. It's very much part of our practice because it moves us forward in a way that is coherent to where we want to, how we want to show up in life and be in life. So positive, you know, positive thinking, positive affirmation, you know, positive imagination, imagining ourselves in another way, imagining the world in another way, is helpful. But please understand, it's imaginary. So don't be disappointed. Don't be frustrated if reality is different than how you imagined it's going to be, including yourself. I mean, that's our wisdom. We have to. Our thoughts aren't real. The whole world we have created for ourselves, past, present, and future, is not real. It's just our own creation. But I would say, if you're going to create your own thing, why don't you create a beautiful thing and a helpful thing?
Jenica asked, if we do get the virus, how could you recommend practicing with the sickness?
Yeah, so obviously, and I think I put it into our email yesterday, I mean, we do have a Sangha Welfare Committee. And again, please, if you do get sick, I mean, you know, with that virus or another virus or some kind of, please let us know. We'll do our best to be with you. Again, it doesn't mean we don't care for each other. And we certainly know with certain precautions, you know, we can be there for each other. You know, it's not as if everybody has to be isolated. Again, practicing with sickness is exactly what these three first mantras are about. And, you know, we practice with sickness, old age, and death. And so when we are sick, even significantly sick, to give in to fear, to give in to despair, to give in to anger, only does us harm. And we know it also has some effect on our capacity of our body to heal and our immune system to be cultivating negativity. So obviously, to when we get sick, to say to ourselves, oh, this is sickness. You know what I mean? Like I've been saying, I am of the nature to get sick for a while, but this is it. Our bodies are of the nature to get sick. The body, you've heard me say, the body was called by the Buddha a magnet for sickness. Right? A magnet, it's just like it just pulls it in. Right? And so we want to make sure that we don't give in to afflictive emotions, right? And we use that time to both reflect on impermanence, right? But also to more deeply reflect on the truth of that this body, you see, that we have been so obsessed with, we are so identified with, is really simply a vehicle that has been loaned to us. It was loaned to us by our parents. It has been nurtured, but it is primarily a vehicle for our mind. Because at death, the mind and the body will separate. And so sickness, especially significant sickness, you know, is kind of often a wake-up call of, again, the fragility of the body. Ultimately, our body is not dependable. We cannot ultimately depend on it. It is fragile. It is subject to causes and conditions. That is why, if I'm going to rely on something, I'd much rather rely on the Dharma deeply placed within my mind. That is something I can count on. It transcends what's going on with my body, and it transcends what's going on with the physical universe around me. This is why, when we have these times, where the fragility and impermanence of life, especially our bodies, become front and center, it is a good time to reflect very personally about our own over-identification, over-attachment to these bodies that are essentially impermanent and fragile and subject to change. Meaningful time.
Beatrice says, I'm reminded of Fred's words from a past Dharma talk on adversity. So that's what this feels like. My fear now reminds me to feel compassion for others who've suffered epidemics and pandemics and other times and places. And then Tracy said, could you please speak briefly on how to touch the levels of the storehouse consciousness as opposed to simply manipulating the intellectual levels of the mind?
In 2 minutes, okay. Because I think we need to stop. Actually, I know that I gave a half-day workshop on Yogacara, which allows out the storehouse consciousness, last weekend. And then on Sunday, I think my talk was mostly about the storehouse and how to transform it. So I don't know if that's been posted yet, Les. We don't know. But that's primarily dealing with it. But again, we cannot know our storehouse where most of kind of the mind is based. We cannot know it directly, but we can know it by what comes up, because what's coming up is coming up not from the outside, it's coming up from the inside. So if we're very present and mindful to what's arising in the present, wholesome, unwholesome, positive, negative, we will see, you know, because it's only coming from the storehouse consciousness. So it is at the moment, in the present moment, when wholesome and unwholesome arrives, that's how we transform. Okay? What do I do now? Do I feed the fear? Do I feed the anger? Do I feed the sadness, despair, or not? Do I cultivate the opposite? Or not? So it is in the present moment, the way we deal with the afflictive and transform it by our response to it when it arises, and most importantly, how we are cultivating the wholesome and the positive, the things we want to be, that's how we transform. Because in the moment, whatever we're thinking or doing or saying is going back down into the storehouse. And if you put more positive things in the storehouse, you are transforming your storehouse. Not overnight, because we have a lot of stuff in there. But it, again, it's changing the quotient. Anyhow, there's a lot more there. But it really, practice is about transforming the storehouse. So that's why people who think it's all about transforming what the most apparent often find themselves frustrated. So we should probably stop. So, so again, this has been an experiment. I hope this has been beneficial to everyone. And again, if you didn't write it down, these are the three fierce mantras of Tsangpa Gyare. Tsangpa Gyare, but I don't think he even did his name. Three fierce. In the world of mantras, there are these positive mantras and these fierce mantras. They're used for different things. Fierce mantras are like meant to break things up. So these are the fierce mantras. They destroy fear and anger and despair. They destroy hope and fear and awaken us to a much more wondrous life, freer life. So good, please access the three fierce mantras.